Welcome to the Aquariumax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 82, recorded August 3rd, 2011.
Greetings, all.
I can talk. It's a miracle.
Our voices have returned.
Hooray!
Well, first of all, we would like to thank Brian for permitting us to interview him and for all his contributions last week on the Nano Reef Show.
Indeed. Thank you, Brian.
We would also like to thank those who reviewed and rated us on iTunes. We got some nice reviews up and some more ratings up, so that is very welcome. Thank you very much to those of you who did it. And if you haven't done it, it's not too late. But I will now stop harping on that for, an hour.
A good hour.
A good hour, at least. So, there you go.
We have a new movie.
We do, on YouTube. Well, not a feature-length film or anything, but we've got...
Oh, come on.
Some clips of... Some HD
clips.
We
could make a feature-length film of these guys. They're like monsters. We could make a monster from the Black Lagoon thing with these.
It's true. We've got a big triops. And it's got some pretty nice close-ups, and it's in HD. And
it actually came out really clear.
Yeah.
That was one of your better shots of a triops.
Yeah, and there's several different shots there. It has an exuvia, a molted skin right next to it in several of the shots. And this was kind of fun. The song that we chose through YouTube Audio Swap was called Loving the Monster, which fits for a triops.
It was pretty appropriate.
So if you want to see one up close and personal without actually getting up close and personal, maybe you should check out our video. It's only like a minute and a half long
or
something.
It's not very long.
No, so there you go.
We have a got ways to go for a feature-length film. We got to switch around the editing a little bit, see if we can stretch it out.
Yeah, and get some plot and more actors. But there we go.
Those are minor details. Okay, what does Jackson have to tell us about his bristlenose placos?
Well, he decided he wanted to breed them.
Oh, just like
you. He's got one.
Lovely.
Yeah. And he asked about that, and so I sent him some links on how to distinguish a male from a female, because he was wondering about how to do that, and told him to go check out episode 8, which is a long ago, far away time. When
the long and glorious tradition.
Yes, but it talks about our bristlenoses.
We should just see how many quotes we can get in from that particular movie, which shall remain nameless in this episode.
We could try that if you want.
That'd be funny.
Okay. So, he wanted to see about these bristlenoses and how to breed them, and I sent him a couple of links, but just the other day I took some shots of a male and a female of ours, so I'll try to put those up on the resources page if I can.
Well, give us a brief description of male versus female.
Basically, the males are more bristly. They have...
Get out!
No, really, they have bristles all over their
they've got a beard.
Face. Yeah, yeah. The females can have bristles.
They think the beard is sexy.
I would hope so, because the males certainly sport a big bushy growth on their face. And the females don't have as many bristles.
That's good.
Well, so, Jackson, I'll try to get those up, but I guess you already know how it works. Jackson had some other comments.
Uh-huh.
About...
I don't know. Tell me what
know?
He has it about.
Oh, about cherry shrimp.
Oh!
He wanted to get some cherry shrimp.
He wanted to get some cherry shrimp.
Yes. And he was wondering about their tank mates you can keep them with, and about breeding them and so on. He has a tank with some, with a gourami in it, an opaline gourami, and some guppies. And he was wondering if he could put them in there and breed them. And I said,
What do you think?
Any fish that can eat cherry shrimp probably will. And since cherry shrimp come in bite-sized pieces, it's really the most diminutive fish. Keeping them with fish will keep their numbers down somewhat. But it does depend on the fish. And I've kept them with various creatures, including dwarf frogs. I actually can keep a sustained population going with dwarf frogs, because they don't eat all of them, but they do eat some. I can keep a population going with goldfish for quite a while. I mean, eventually they peter out, but they do produce several generations, it seems, before they completely go. I can keep them breeding totally with neon rainbows or guppies or things like that. So they wouldn't really reach their biotic potential in such a situation. You will probably have some reproduction in a place where there are fish that are not absolutely ravenous shrimp eaters, but they really do best if, as far as reproduction goes, if they're kept without fish. And that's, you know, that's my opinion on that. But I think you could possibly get them to work. I am a bit leery about the gourami, but Jackson says that his doesn't bug his baby guppies. So if it's not bugging the baby guppies, there's a fighting chance, I guess, that you could try. So maybe it's just a really passive gourami for some reason.
Nice, docile, fishy.
Yeah, maybe so. And he asked how many to keep, how many to start out with to get, and I said maybe 12 to 24 is a good number to start with, and make sure you have plenty of males and females and you can get them breeding, hopefully. With fish in the tank, if you're going to go ahead and take that leap, then I would advise introducing them after having fed the fish.
So they don't think they're getting fed.
Right, and then maybe turn off the lights and put the shrimp in, and then turn the lights back on after the fish have...
So they have a chance to scamper and hide.
Right, right. The shrimp have had a chance to hide. So, I don't... You know, it may or may not work, but if you're going to try it, then those are my points of advice for that.
Alrighty. Oh, we do have some good news from Juliet in Paris with her cherry shrimp.
Yes. She found some cherry shrimp from a source that had a pH similar to hers, so she didn't have to worry about it. She could circumvent the acclimation to a large extent.
That's
not
a
completely,
whole lot easier.
Yeah, she doesn't have to worry about pH shock. So, problem solved.
Yay! Congratulations!
Yes, we're glad that's working out.
Okay, and we heard from Mick in Carnforth again. Hello, Mick.
Indeed we did. Mick was hoping that our voices were recovering, and now they have, so thank you. He said we sounded very like Barry White on the last show. He's a singer with a characteristic voice, if those of you who may not know, kind of a deep voice. And so
yeah,
that was kind
like
of
I said, your voice was almost as deep as mine last time.
Yeah. And he's looking forward to hearing the Nano Reef show. And
I imagine he already has by now.
He probably has by now. He remembers us talking about the John Innes fertilizer number 2.
Mm-hmm.
And he was wondering if it's the John Innes number 2 compost. And he's actually a professional horticulturalist, so, you know, he knows
cool
about this kind of stuff. So I could say, Mick knows John Innes. Maybe not personally, but he knows this stuff. And he said there's a base fertilizer and there's a compost, and they both exist. And they add the fertilizer, the base fertilizer, to the compost, and they have different levels of strength.
Different formulation?
Yeah, they have formulation 1, 2, and 3. And the one is kind of... for just tiny little plantlets, just starting to grow seedlings. And number 3 is for plants in established pots. And he's tried using those. He tried using number 3 in an outdoor pond for marginals, you know, the plants that stick up out of the water on the edge.
Okay.
Or the margin of the pond. And he said he did get good plant development, but he also got a lot of green water algae growing in the hill. He hooked up a UV unit to it. So, you know, I was wondering about something like that, too, because... And I should have asked Stuart about that, because, you know, people do plant tanks by putting a layer of compost right in the bottom of the aquarium,
mm-hmm,
and then layering gravel or sand on top of it. That's what Wahlstedt does. She's famous for that. She has an article in the latest Aquarium Fish, actually, about
tell
that.
Tell us who Wahlstedt is.
Is it Diane? I think it's Diane. It might be Diana. I can't remember right now. But she's famous in the aquarium world for her style of planted tanks, where... she takes dirt, you know, it's mm-hmm often a compost. I think she uses Miracle-Gro organic choice compost a lot of the time. Puts it on the bottom after taking out the big pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, puts it on the bottom of a tank, puts a layer of gravel or sand on the top, and then plants the tank.
Hmm.
And she doesn't use...
I guess that would make sense, wouldn't
it? Right, right. And she doesn't use CO2 supplemental, mm-hmm, CO2 like as in a gaseous form, because... the bacteria
in the compost. And
well, the bacterial action on the compost produces it. She doesn't use a lot of aeration because that would drive that CO2 away.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't do a lot of fertilization because there's a lot of stuff in the compost.
She kind of just takes care of all of those in one step at the beginning.
Right. And she...
It's a good idea.
She uses natural light to supplement the light that comes from the aquarium lighting, usually window mm-hmm light. And she usually gets really, really good plant growth.
Cool.
So... She had an article about growing cherry shrimp pots. Not cherry shrimp pots. Cherry shrimp bowls, where you take a gallon bowl and you plant it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then you put a few cherry shrimp in it. And, yeah, they look nice. And I've seen her tanks. They're fun. They're very naturalistic. They're not like a a Dutch aquarium or an Amano style aquarium.
Mm-hmm.
They're just kind of a green lush jungle, and they're fun. I like them.
Cool.
And not to say anything bad about the other styles, but
no,
I like
they're
those
just
too.
All different.
It's a different style. It's fun stuff. So maybe that's what Stuart's talking about with the compost. Or maybe he's talking about something else. I would be interested to find out which one he meant. So let us know, Stuart.
You can let us know.
Yeah. And let's see, what else Mick has got for us? He said he's going to be ordering some crystal black / bee shrimp.
And bee, like bee,
like the insect.
Honeybees?
Yeah. They're sometimes
are they black
called
and
bee
yellow?
Shrimp. They're more black and white, really.
Mm, but are they striped?
They look the same as a crystal red shrimp, usually. They've got various patterns, but the stereotypical one has like a white area of its body followed by a black, and then white, and then black. Sort of like a candy cane. Not really like a candy cane. What am I thinking? But like that. You know what I mean, right? And they
alternating are... Alternating color, at least?
Yes. Alternating bands surrounding
bands,
their body.
There you go.
And the... crystal black shrimp, or the bee shrimp, is the direct ancestor of the crystal red shrimp. Actually, the crystal red is a sport from the crystal black.
What does a sport mean?
Just a genetic mutation.
So which one was first?
The black, crystal
oh, okay.
black shrimp. And they are actually a sport of the original species, I believe.
What color is the original species?
I'm
just
not sure,
kind of
I
that
think.
Shrimpy gray color?
And I could be wrong about that, but I don't think so. No, I think... I'm not sure what the original crystal black looked like, but
I bet Mick would know.
The original crystal reds were just mostly red.
Oh,
and they
okay.
came from these bee shrimp, so I don't know. I do know that the black shrimp was the crystal black was the first one. The crystal reds descended from them. They will hybridize because they're the same species.
Okay.
So I'm actually wondering.
So maybe you would get some with alternating black and red?
I don't think that's shown up yet.
But theoretically?
Theoretically, I guess you might come up with that sport, and people would probably love that. They'd call it, like, the Halloween crystal Halloween shrimp or something. I don't know what they'd call
it. They'd call
it
the dragon shrimp.
Yeah, see, that would work. But usually, you know, genetics don't work that way, unfortunately. He also mentions he's getting some yellow cherry shrimp, which sounds funny, but they call them
yellow
cherry.
Well, they do have yellow cherries. Aren't Rainier cherries yellow?
I think they are, so there you go. And Queen Anne cherries are yellow, too, I think.
There you go.
So there you go.
I don't know if they taste as good. I've never had them.
Oh, they're good.
But you're not going to be eating the shrimp anyways. So.
No, but it's funny that they call them yellow cherry shrimp. They call the ones we got in Hawaii wild cherry shrimp sometimes. Because
what color were they?
Red.
I don't remember.
They're just normal shrimp color, sometimes
they're
transparent,
kind of
sometimes
gray.
Greenish, sometimes brownish, sometimes grayish, and different colors. They're called wild cherries just because they're the same species as the red cherry, and the yellow cherry are the same species, too. But I bet, I can bet money, well, I'm not going to, but I could... that if you cross a yellow cherry shrimp with a red cherry shrimp, you won't get an orange shrimp. Just because of the way genetics work. You know.
Maybe you'd get a banana shrimp.
You might.
Just get like a whole bunch of different fruit shrimp.
That would be cool. But you'll probably end up getting something closer to the wild form. That's what often happens.
They just kind of revert?
Many times. But I'm not sure. I can't state with any degree of confidence what you would get. One might be entirely dominant, and you just get a whole bunch of yellow shrimp that carry the gene for red, or vice versa, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. But
genetics is funky stuff.
Yeah. But I doubt that Mick is going to be hybridizing them. He may with the crystal black, because some people, because crystal reds are highly inbred, they get crystal black so that they can do some selective breeding, and they, through several generations,
kind of
breed mix
some more
in
lines
and,
in.
Right. So he may be planning on doing that. I don't know. And he's going to be sending in some pics when he gets those. He's also getting some baby yellow rabbit snails.
What are rabbit
coming
snails?
Coming with that shipment. Rabbit snails are funky. I've seen them before. They look kind of like...
a rabbit?
Malaysian trumpet snails.
Oh, okay.
You know, they look kind of like that in terms of the shell shape and their body plan. They've got kind of a proboscis and so on. The general body shape is similar, but the colors of their skin are quite different. I've seen a couple of different species. Some with like little gold spots and some with yellow bodies and different things. So I'd be interested in seeing those again. I don't know a ton about them, actually. I think they're from the same place that some of these newer shrimp are from. I'm not sure how it's pronounced, something like Sulawesi, some islands out in the Southeast Asia or something like that.
Hmm.
Pardon my ignorance of that. But they're somewhere in the area, I think, and they're interesting snails, but I don't know a whole lot about them. I have seen them in our local fish store.
I'm afraid our break is about to overtake the snails.
Okay, that wouldn't be hard. Snails are slow.
So's the break. This isn't a commercial.
because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
Okay, so, Mick, just, yeah, we'd be happy to see some pictures of your new shrimp and your new snails when those show up, and maybe you can tell us a little bit more about rabbit snails, because I don't really know a whole lot about them.
Oh, we have something from Nigel. Have we heard from Nigel
before? I don't think so. I think he's fairly new. So
welcome, Nigel.
Welcome.
Where's he at?
I'm not sure.
He didn't say where he's from, huh?
I don't believe he said.
Nigel from Unknown.
Yeah. But he says, hi, Russ and Kelly, great show, really helpful info.
Yay!
Glad you like it. He is wondering how to breed yo-yo loaches, as a friend of his has 3 males and 2 females, and one of the females is very rounded and full of eggs, has been for the last 2 weeks, but there's still no sign of spawning.
Hmm.
The female has been in a 10-gallon tank with a bare bottom and a few cave areas to hide in and has kept it low light. So, well, first of all, I gotta say, I've never kept yo-yo loaches.
Tell us a little bit about them, because...
Well, yo-yo loaches look a little, in general body shape, they're more like a clown loach than a coolie loach.
Okay.
They're not like serpentine. Maybe a little bit more elongate than a clown loach, I think, but not too much. And they're rather attractively barred, I guess you could call them. They're not stripes, they're more bars, but they're quite thin, and they're attractive little fish.
Why do they call them yo-yo loaches? Do they like to go up and down in the tank or something?
I could be wrong on this, but if memory serves, I think it's because if you look at the way their markings are on the side of their body, it kind of spells out yo-yo.
Really?
Yeah, at least that's in some funny. Individuals, it sort of suggests the word yo-yo written on there. I think that's why it is. And I've kept a few loaches of different types. And some loaches in the hobby have been spawned fairly regularly, and others have not been spawned at all. And others are not respawned reliably, and some are just spawned by accident. And some are spawned with hormonal injections. So there's all kinds of loaches.
Which ones do they spawn regularly?
Well, I think clown loaches, they spawn now with some hormonal injections.
Mm.
It's not that hard to spawn coolie loaches, although they still collect them in the wild, but you can do it. They know what the spawning triggers are and things like that. But there are not a whole lot of reports that I could find about yo-yo loaches spawning. My understanding is that it's very common for the females to fill up with eggs, and it's very visible. But from what I can tell, the spawning trigger is not very well understood.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the sticking point is.
Yeah. So she's sitting there full up of eggs waiting for her trigger that doesn't come.
Right. Nobody knows exactly what it is, as far as I know, and that I was able to ascertain. I didn't, spend weeks researching it, but I spent a little time looking it up, and I don't think it's very common for them to spawn in captivity.
Because they don't really know how to do it yet.
They don't really know how to do it. But, most fish, many species of fish at least, respond well to the basic regimen where you separate the males from the females for a time, you condition them, maybe separate them for a week to 10 days, and you condition them with a lot of live foods, and then you put them together at night in a tank with a lot of clean, fresh water, and then in the morning when this light hits the tank, they tend to spawn. But that's true with a lot of fish, but if that were the case with the yo-yo loaches, it probably would have happened more often because people would have tried it.
Right.
So it's probably the case that there's something else going on. Some fish need heavy water changes. And, some
what
fish
would that
need...
simulate in the wild? Just seasonal flooding and rain?
Or? Yeah. Well, here, let's paint this picture, shall we?
Paint the picture for me.
Well, imagine that it does rain in some tropical area where our fish live after a period of relative dryness. Okay? So the fish are sitting in this water that's probably has a fair amount of dissolved minerals in it because quantities of the water have been evaporating. And it could well be that there's not as much food in the water as they would like, and the water might be quite warm from just sitting there in the heat and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly there's a storm in the hills, and a whole bunch of cooler water with lower dissolved mineral content washes down and carries with it a bunch of bugs that have been mm-hmm. sitting in the stream bed. And so the fish get cooler water of lower pH and lower TDS, total dissolved solids, and a whole bunch of live food in the form of these bugs.
So they're happier fish.
With a change in barometric pressure that accompanies a storm.
Okay.
So all of these things happening, if you... is certain fish, if you wait until it is raining or about to rain and you do a big water change, especially one where you simulate a whole bunch of drops falling on the surface of the water,
mm-hmm.
that will sometimes do it.
Interesting.
Yeah, some fish respond well to that. And so there are a lot of different ways to do that, and especially if you use like RO water or distilled water to simulate that the influx of water into the tank, so it's like rainwater. With that low total dissolved solids and fairly low pH and so on. Another, and I'm not saying that the yo-yo loaches will necessarily respond to that, but some fish do, you know. Coolie loaches are one that you can do something like that, and that tends to help. Certain fish need just the right medium to spawn in, like dwarf puffers. Sometimes they won't spawn unless they have a patch of moss or some plant that's similar to moss, like a fine-leaved sort of
soft drop the eggs on?
Patch, yeah. They won't always spawn unless that's actually in the tank.
Hmm.
I'm not going to say that that's 100% of the time, but that has happened. Or bristlenose placos. They really like to have a cave or a cave-like area or lair to spawn in, and if they don't have one that's to their liking, they won't necessarily spawn. And it might just be a patch of, you know, secluded area under a bunch of leaves in a planted tank or
whatever. But it has
whatever,
to feel...
It has to feel somewhat like a cave for them to really...
They want a little privacy.
Yeah, it might be a coconut with a hole in it. It might be a flower pot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, if it's cave-like, they'll tend to...
A hole in the ground covered by a piece of tall pole.
There you go. See? So, I unfortunately can't say a whole lot about yo-yo loaches because I don't know all that much. But it does bring up some interesting ideas. And if anyone out there has kept yo-yo loaches who would like to chime in, please feel free... I would also like to mention a couple of things about some things that I've noticed and that I've done lately.
Tell us.
This weekend I spent some time adding some black fluorite to an aquarium, redoing the substrate in this tank. Haven't tried black fluorite before. I wanted to try that, and I think I'm going to like it because I like black substrate. Put some in. I actually contacted Seachem. They're the ones who made it.
Oh, about your broken lid.
Yeah, I talked to them about two things. Had a broken lid on the Flourish Excel carbon supplement that was stuck, and I also had this fluorite that I was wondering about using with coolie loaches and seeing if it would... They love to dig in things and see if it would scratch up their bellies or anything like that because the fluorite has kind of
sharpish
edges. So contacted them. They got right back to me very quickly, and they said that they don't have problems keeping coolies on any type of fluoride as long as they have hiding places, and I do have hiding places for mm-hmm. them, so once, if they feel like they can hide in these other places, they have less of a tendency to try to burrow in the
okay.
fluoride, and it doesn't hurt them. So that was nice to know. I made sure they wrote me back before I asked about that, and I asked them about the container of Flourish Excel with this lid. It has the childproof cap that wouldn't come loose, and they said actually on the site it mentioned several cases of that.
Hmm.
And they said it could become cross-threaded, and that can make it get stuck. But after I emailed them, I took the bottle and I just pushed on it extremely hard. I put all my weight down on it and turned it as it was pushed up against the table, and I got the thing off.
Oh, wow.
So
is it just open now, or did you put something else on?
It opened. No, it just opens now. So
it
may
works
have become
now.
Cross-threaded, I guess.
Okay.
It was interesting.
You fixed it.
I thought it was nice of them to contact me so quickly and specifically about my particular issue.
That's always nice.
Yeah, that was nice. I've always liked Seachem's stuff. They've got good stuff, and apparently they've got good customer service now because I just tried it and it worked. I would also like to talk about one thing about the fluorite. Mm-hmm. If you've never tried fluorite as a substrate for planted tanks,
mm-hmm.
and you are thinking about it, there are a couple of things you should be aware of. One is there's no particular reason to use fluorite if you're not going to use a plant, if it's not a planted tank.
Well, that's what it's for,
it's
isn't
four
it?
Plants,
it's substrate
so
for plants.
If you just say, ooh, it sounds cool, then, you know, I don't know, somebody might say, I've never tried fluorite, maybe I should, but they're not thinking about a planted tank. So, you know, don't try it unless you're doing a planted tank, because it's a nutrient-rich substrate specifically for plants, yes. But it gets cloudy. Gets really
cloudy. When you first put it in.
When you first put it in. And there are two things you can do. One, you can ignore the cloudiness because it goes away
in a day or two. Or
so
it's about back to normal now. And you
right.
did it on Saturday?
Right. And I did the lazy way where you just kind of toss it in and let it go.
Mm-hmm.
And then it clears up. It doesn't bug the fish or anything. You might want to change the pads in your filter a little bit more often in those couple of days, which I did.
And actually, I was thinking you could do it around Halloween because then it looks all foggy and ghost-like
mysterious.
In the tank.
Yeah. So you can do it that way. Or if you want it to be less cloudy, there's a couple of things that people do. Some people try rinsing it off really well, but the thing is...
Does that rinse off some of the nutrients and things?
It
though?
Rinses off the very small particles, or the fines, as they call them,
mm-hmm.
which is not the end of the world, but they're kind of nice to have because they have very small surface area, so you're likely to get minerals kicking
yeah,
into the system more
into
quickly.
The
one thing that I've tried that is not my idea, but I read somewhere, is that if you set the bag down on the bottom... See, I already had a little bit of existing substrate that I wanted to keep under there because it was full of detritus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was leaving it there on purpose so that you can get the chemical reactions occurring
right.
with the detritus and the fluorite. So I was leaving that there on purpose. But if you are starting with a new tank, you can... And put the bag down on the bottom, on the glass, and then slit it with some sort of sharp tool along three sides.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just sort of...
Scoot the plastic out
from under it, yeah, and it just sort of pours out there. And then you put something like a clean, soap-free plate on top of it and add the water very slowly. And then you tend to get less cloudiness.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That's one way to do it. Some people, there are other ways to do it too, so you can look that up. But that's one way, and I've tried that way, and it works pretty well in minimizing the clouding. It doesn't completely remove it, but it helps. And then something else that's been kind of fun that we've tried recently is I've experimented with a couple of new floating plants that I've never kept before. One is Salvinia.
Salvinia, that's a pretty name.
Salvinia, yeah. And it's a kind of floating fern that it was sold to me as fairy fern.
Mm-hmm.
But fairy fern refers to a lot of different species. So I wanted to use the scientific name. I'm not sure which species I have, and there are various species, but sold to me as fairy fern, but the azoleas are also called that. But anyway, it looks a lot like duckweed, but it's bigger, which is kind of fun, because it doesn't grow out of control quite as quickly as duckweed. And it's not duckweed. It's not. It's a fern, and duckweed is actually a flowering plant, though you don't often see the flowers. But it's been interesting because I think it's more attractive than duckweed on the surface of the tank. It's easier to remove, doesn't grow quite as quickly. And so right now I've got it in a 10-gallon tank with some celestial pearl danios and a little honey gourami and a few other fish in there, little small baby fish in there. And it looks really cool. It helps absorb nutrients pretty effectively. So I've just got some Java fern and that Salvinia up at the surface. And it is fun. It's interesting. And it's a good way to, if you want something that'll just absorb some excess nutrients when you're starting out a new planted tank or something like that, or you've got just a few things growing that aren't very fast, like the Java fern growing in one little clump in the tank, then it can be useful in reducing the nutrients and out-competing algae somewhat, which is kind of nice. And so as long as you don't let it get out of control, it can be a good plant to try out. I've also got another one that I bought at the same time. Dwarf water lettuce. And water
sounds
lettuce...
Sounds healthy.
Yeah. Grows like crazy, also. Not quite as fast as the Salvinia, but it grows pretty fast. It grows on the surface. Both of them produce roots that go for an inch or two or more underwater. The water lettuce has longer roots. And... they reproduce vegetatively, so they're both pretty fast, and they're good at absorbing nutrients, and the water lettuce just has leaves that are a little bigger, less hairier, they're kind of less hairy, they're kind of smooth, and basically same
So you get some
function.
Of the benefits of duckweed without some
right.
of the
Disadvantages. They're not small enough to get caught in your filters. Well, I can't say that for every filter, but they're not so tiny, and they don't cover the surface quite as quickly, but they are really fast growers.
So you still have to keep on top of them?
You still have to keep on top of them and remove...
Feed them to the goldfish.
...numbers of them. Yeah, they're good for feeding to goldfish and other herbivorous creatures, and I think they can be attractive in the right situation, and if you just need some place where you can absorb nutrients, or you just want to hide live bear fry or something like that, they can be a good plant to keep in mind. Just don't ever dump them outside where they could possibly get in the waterway. It's going to be dangerous.
Yeah, that wouldn't be such a good thing.
Right. But there you go. That's about it for this week, so...
May the fish be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.